Rules Committee hearing together. We have Representative Cottula with us, Representative Johnson. We have the Majority Leader, Representative Samuels, Representative Guttenberg, and Representative Harris with us, and Chairman Coghill. Today, what we're going to do is we're going to take up House Joint Resolution Number 14. Representative, what's his name up here?
Yeah.
Representative Seaton has a change, and then I have one person who came here to testify, so I will give them moments for a concise testimony on this particular issue only. And so, Mr. Majority Leader, if you wouldn't mind going ahead and making the motion to accept the CS for...
Thank you, Mr. Rules Chairman. I move that we adopt CS for HJR 14 Rules 25-LS0639-L as our working document.
Without objection, then, we'll have the L version for CS for Joint Resolution Number 14 for us, and we have Representative Seaton here. Could you explain to us what we have here before us in the committee substitute?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What we have is a resolution supporting the efforts of our congressional delegation to that was placed in the energy bill last year, and that went through, and then it was eliminated in the Senate. And what the resolution does is support their legislation, which would allow Exxon Valdez plaintiffs, if they receive a settlement, to deposit more than the current allowed yearly average or yearly amount in their in a retirement plan, and it would also allow them 3-year income averaging, as is done with farmers with variable income. So the only changes that are made are in three different places in the bill. It takes out the reference to the previous Senate and House bills that this piece of legislation was in, and replaces it with the current legislation, which is H.R. 2419, the Farm Bill, and in Section 12801. So that's just all it is changing the reference to the U.S. congressional bill that we are supporting the identical legislation that they had in the energy bill last year, which is now incorporated in the farm bill. It's passed the House, and it's sitting, and it's in the Senate.
Questions? We have one person that I gave the nod that I would give him testimony if he'd stay concise, and so I'm anxious to move this along. So we have one person who was willing to testify on this, so I'm going to ask him to come on forward. So why don't you come on forward, state your name, and give your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Jed Whitaker. I was there the first week of the Exxon Valdez, and I listened to Exxon Live. And this resolution is problematic in that it's not for sure that the Supreme Court will award the punitive damages. It's good to see that you're trying to do this, but I think that if you look at the history of Exxon's behavior in the state of Alaska, it's not honorable, and I would urge the committee and the legislature to, should the Supreme Court not award the punitive damages, to consider revoking Exxon's charter to do business in the state of Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jed. That's a little beyond the scope of where we're at here, but I appreciate that testimony. I think you might have some people who would join you in that sentiment around here. So. So what we have before us is the CS for House Joint Resolution Number 14 Rules. Wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill from committee with individual recommendations.
Any objection?
As amended?
It's a CS.
Or CS.
No.
Thank you.
No objection. The bill will move, the resolution will move with the individual recommendations and a tax zero fiscal note.
Thank you.
I'll take a brief at ease for a second. Brief. Come back into order here. I wanted to make sure Rex was ready, and we have now before us, we have House Bill 303, and we have a possible rules for us, and my intention is to bring the Rules Committee substitute up before us only for consideration, so that we can hear the differences, and then we'll decide whether we want to hold it over or not, keep that. So, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that we adopt the CS for House Bill 303 Rules 25-LS1183/O as a working document.
And I will object so that we can have that in limbo until we find out if we want to accept it. So, with that, Mr. Shattuck, in place of Representative Newman, who is out of town right now, what I intend to do here is not open up a bunch of public testimony. I just want you to tell me the difference between where the bill was and what this CS does. And then I think a little bit of question and answers from the committee, but it is not my intention to move this out today. So, but we do need to hear kind of where we're at on this. And it's my intention as a chairman to try to get something that is a workable bill from here to the floor, if we can do it. So, Mr. Shattuck.
Thank you, Chairman, for Rex Shattuck, staff to Representative Mark Newman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for bringing this bill before the Rules Committee, that we can continue to work on it and address the concerns of the committee and the legislature as a whole. A brief note on what the bill's intent was in its genesis was really to address some of the some of the needs of consumers in the state of Alaska and the small businesses in the state of Alaska and in areas of the sales of four-wheelers, snow machines, marine products. The idea being to create a better environment for the consumer and small businesses within Alaska, recognizing that these products are, unlike seen in other parts of the nation, these are not just recreational vehicles. In most cases, these are to be considered transportation. They have greater commercial use and then recreation. Also recognizing in Alaska a certain seasonality of the use of the equipment, unlike you see in other parts of the state, other parts of the nation. The bill has come a long ways. There's been several versions, and we've attempted at every step to address the concerns brought up by committees and those asking questions of it. It's a work in progress, and we hope that we can meet the needs of this committee and continue on down the legislative process.
Mr. Shattuck, do you have a sectional that goes along, corresponds with the rules proposal?
Mr. Chair, yes, there is a sectional for the O version that's been adopted.
Oh, I'm sorry. I walked right past it. Sorry.
It was definitely looked over carefully to make sure with all the changes that we got the right numbering on to. So if it was a little bit late in getting here this afternoon, we apologize for that. If you would like, I can explain, just briefly cover the differences between the O version and the O version, the L version, that being came out of Judiciary. There's an awful lot of deletes, so if you'll have patience with me in running down through that. Page 2, line 10, delete Article 2. This covered areas of responsibility. There was definite conversation and concern raised in the process to this point. Page 3, line 8, delete Section 4527-200, sale or shipment before agreement. Page 3, line 11, we deleted Section 4527-210, involuntary order or delivery. These are all sections that had an awful lot of vetting and discussion on. Page 3, line 22. Section 4527-230 deleted that this section, which was delivery of products in reasonable quantities. Page 3, line 27, deleted Section 4527-240, selection of a delivery. Page 3, line 31, we deleted Section 4527-250, product damage responsibility. On page 4, line 22, we deleted authorized dealers continue selling a particular product and give 60 days advance written notice of the discontinuance to the manufacturer or distributor by mail, and inserted agreement with an authorized dealer is terminated or not renewed, to kind of clean that up and make the language a little bit more concise. Page 5, line 11, we deleted section 4527.320, optional retention. Page 5, line 17, we deleted section 4527.330, failure to repurchase. Page 6, line 1, we deleted section 4527.350, carrier and costs. Also, page 6, line 16, we changed the date from 30 to 60 days. And likewise, on page 6, line 20, changed from 30 to 60. The changes in the dates, as we went through the process, we were trying to match these up with industry standards. And that was, again, a change, extending the time and trying to match it with some of the industry standards. Page 6, line 31, deleted the words timely from the section title, and also within the paragraph line, page 7, line 1, deleted the word timely. Rather an arbitrary term, was questioned in several different committees. On page 7, line 23, we deleted section 4527.450, request to return items. Page 8, line 3, we deleted section 4527.470, boat package warranties and branding. Page 8, line 12, section 4527.480. Performance of warranty service work. Page 8, line 26, 4527.600, liabilities resulting from audits. Page 9, line 13, we deleted 4527.360, dealing with advertising. Rather than go back and explain what was in each of the sections, suffice to say they were all questions and concerns raised in several committees, and we deleted them.
And I'm sorry, I'm clearing up a little discussion. So if you are watching the L version, you'll see them crossed out, in, I think, in your packet, and then O version has.
And Mr. Chair, there was significant renumbering because of that.
And I think that was one of the things that we were just talking about.
The only thing I might note was there was one particular item that dealt with that was moved to a totally different section, and I can identify that for you really quick for those that might be looking through the bill. Section on the L version, you would have found it on page 3, line 18, and that dealt with refusal to deliver or ship, mm-hmm. And that ended up in. And in the new version, that ended up in
Article 4.
Article 4, yes.
Page 5.
Thank you.
Well, and as the committee can see, this bill took a huge earthquake trying to get here. So, so now what I would like you to do, Rex, if you can, just give me a rundown of what this new version has as far as a continuity of a body of law. Help me understand from the first to the last. Now that we have said many of the various different requirements, help me understand contextually what we've got. Before we do that, Representative Curtula.
Just to ask if you want questions during this committee hearing or if we should hold them to the next, or what would be the best?
Here's what my plan was. Good question. My plan was to get this before us, and we can ask questions, because I think we need to ask the question, do we want to even bring this proposal before us at this point? But I still wanted him to give us what he sees as a body of law, now that it's shed so many sections. So give him the opportunity to kind of tell us what he has here. And then if you want to ask questions along that way, so that we can do that. I'm concerned, though, I want to get us out of here probably before the 6 o'clock hour and earlier if I can. So this bill will have further discussions, believe me.
So if I can just quickly clarify, because I think that if I do it section by section, we'll be here past 6. So maybe what we could do is have, you know, Mr. Shattuck, give us the presentation. Maybe, Mr. Chairman, I could lay out some of the sections and the initial questions, and then maybe we can continue to work in the interim before it comes back up, if we indeed adopt the CS.
Well, that would certainly be my intention. So I wanted him to get a chance to explain the bill as he's got it written. Certainly, I think I would let you and any other committee member put on the table concerns they see in even this particular CS. Although I've read it only once, I have not studied it. So
me
that's one of the reasons why I didn't want to move it out today. I haven't had a chance to really scrutinize it myself. So why don't we let Rex continue? I'll let you put some of your concerns on the table. And as they go through it, if you have other concerns, put them out so that he's aware of them. And then because of the concerns, I am even open to not even adopting this version. But remember, that puts it back to the one that has all those X's in it. So just for what it's worth. All right, Mr. Shattuck.
Mr. Chairman, as far as major policy issues that were originally maybe identified in this bill from the beginning were interstate commerce and possible antitrust issues. And I think in working with Ledge Council, Legislative Affairs and their legal staff, as well as Ed Sniffen from the Attorney General's office, we tried to address those issues, interstate commerce, because obviously we're looking at impacting manufacturers who are from without the state, and the dealers and consumers within the state. Interstate commerce comes into play. At our last discussion with the Department of Law, we believe that we've negated that concern. Interstate commerce basically is somewhat arbitrary, just in terms of its evaluation. Are you violating it or are you not? I say that because, as I understand, basically the measurement or the weight is do you unduly impact the manufacturer, the dealer, and this law is in place in several other states, as well as the Attorney General, having looked at it, believed that expressed to us that he did not believe at this particular point in time there was significant issues to burden one side or the other. Consequently, they were comfortable, as they explained to us, on the interstate commerce aspect, possible antitrust issues. I suppose,
and Mr. Shattuck, that was a result of going from the CS that we had before us to this CS. There was a change there. Can you tell us what that specifically was?
Most definitely in that area. There were numerous sections that were deleted that all it kind of took that question out of the mix. Okay.
Well, maybe what I'll do, Mr. Shattuck, is go ahead and allow a couple of questions to kind of bring us in to focus on some of the issues here. Okay. So is there anybody on the committee that at this point that has an issue with the interstate commerce issue or the verbiage? How come I'm surprised? Not surprised. Representative Krutula.
And first, I want to thank you, and I want to thank your staff for you know, looking at the bill and for trying to figure out how we can make this work, because I certainly am very pro-consumer, and I'm real concerned about if there is a situation where we're not seeing appropriate reaction from manufacturers for Alaskans. But in terms of the Interstate Commerce Act, what I'm wondering is, what does the federal law set as the standard? And I'm sorry, I haven't been in any of the other committees, and I have yet to hear what does the federal law require the states to do. And I'm concerned in particular about what the Consumer Product Safety Commission does, because my understanding is there may be some preemption from that federal law in this bill. The second thing I'd like to understand is if this is the law that's in place in other states, I'd like to see what the law is in those other states. I think I heard the sponsor's representative saying that, and I haven't seen that. On the antitrust issues, I did have some specifics. I don't know how distributorships work, but there may be allowances for that under antitrust law. But specifically on page 5, on lines 14 through 17, it says that a manufacturer distributor may not compete with an authorized dealer who's operating under an agreement with a manufacturer distributor in the same line, brand, model, make of that product. So I don't know why that section is in a bill that deals with, my understanding was to try to deal with problems with manufacturers, with, you know, things that are life and death to us, but I just don't, one, I don't understand why that's necessary, and two, I don't understand if that is an antitrust problem or not. So it's those kinds of things.
Let's get down to the two questions. Have you got backup on antitrust law and its basis?
We have, we had testimony, and I'm not going to represent myself as a legal authority. We had a significant of help, a comment made from the Attorney General's office.
I guess the question then is, can you get us that information?
Yes, we can.
Okay, why don't we get a backup packet on the ICC criteria? And then the next question then would be, Representative Kurtula, help me, from the Interstate Commerce backup, and then you brought up.
Let me continue.
Other states. There are other states, and I think somewhere you had a backup package on that, but I don't think we have it in here. So do you have the a template of other states in their dealership laws that track what you're trying to do here?
We have a package that that has some of the other states and how they've dealt with this. Noting, I suppose, Louisiana probably as the most strongly written and far surpasses what Alaska.
An outline or a matrix that tells us how this lines up for that?
We do not. We can generate one.
Would you do that, please?
Yes.
All right. That's another assignment for this committee. And then I have Representative Faircloth and then Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, line 14, page 5, section 4527.210, Representative Kurtula was talking about competition. So if we could have a definition of a territory, because my understanding is dealerships have territories, and how that is going to interact with this may not compete component of the law, saying when we look at internet and other providers. So how are we describing may not compete? Is it by territory of a dealership? Is it by a city that it's located in? Is it a close association like a rural village? Or I'm trying to understand what is defining the area.
Rex answer this, but I know in one other iteration we had a 30-mile radius right. description. And so, but it would, now that we have this language, can you give us some more concept?
It removes that. We removed that that from there. One of the things that we were advised from the Attorney General's office in terms of concerns and what's typically in the contracts from the dealers is they recognize perhaps a territory by geographic boundaries, municipalities, zip codes, and in the case where you have a like item, like manufacturer, you know, next door to each other, there would and you tried to limit that, then you might have a an issue with that. But in this bill, we address. If you tried to limit competition between different brands, you would provide yourself an issue. If you were addressing territories that typically are agreed on by the manufacturer and they're like brand like products, then you wouldn't have and we removed that section in terms of trying to establish some sort of territory.
Let's do this. This is a question that you need to bring back an answer to. On that one, because it's a significant change, number one, and a different language set, too. So, and we have Ed Sniffen on the line, so he's listening. I didn't really want to get him into it until we had we get down to kind of the crunch in the language. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was regarding internet sales and how, if you, how do you restrict it? It says you can't compete. This certainly doesn't the way I read it, would prohibit a manufacturer from selling anything over the internet in that area. So I have concerns about that. So that was specifically my question.
And from Senator Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a number of concerns with this bill. I have my name on it as a co-sponsor, so I have a lot of concerns. when this was initially brought forward to me, it was presented in a different light. So I want to ask a number of questions here, but I don't know that you have much time you have. But I take the sectional summary, and just in Article 1, the first section, 452701, you say it says prohibits a manufacturer or distributor from threatening to cancel an agreement, and also prohibits manufacturer or distributor from canceling or refusing to renew an agreement, and advance notice unless based on failure or fraudulent activity of the dealer described in the section. And I could go on and on and on about the different sections. Shattuck, is it true or is it not true that when a dealer, whether it be McDonald's or anybody else, the dealer handling Articat Snow Machines or Polaris or whatever, they sign an agreement with the manufacturer to do certain things, and the manufacturer agrees to do certain things when they become the dealer. Is that correct or not?
That is correct. Through the chair, Representative Harris, yes.
Mr. Chairman, if I can continue my line of questioning for just a second here.
Yes, sir.
So then, is everybody pretty clear about what the responsibilities are of either party? In other words, if the manufacturers of Polaris snow machines, for instance, they contact somebody wanting to be a distributor of Polaris snow machines in Juneau, for instance, doesn't get that much snow, but let's just say that they had one here. They would communicate with that entity about what the requirements were to sell Polaris snow machines or Articat snow machines or Skidoo or whatever it happened to be, and they would know up front what the requirements were for not only selling them, but if they were required to maintain them, carry parts, do whatever. They would know that up front. Would that be right or not?
Through the chair, Representative Harris, the contracts, as I understand, address an awful lot of those issues. There have been some concerns raised by the marine dealers within the state of Alaska, as well as nationally, as to the way the contracts are written. That is in part why you see a move nationally to work on those contracts and try and encourage the manufacturers to come to new contracts and negotiate the changes in those contracts. They're not always sensitive or recognize perhaps areas like Alaska.
Okay. Just briefly.
Harris, yes.
I'm trying to get at a point, and I don't know if I'll ever get there or not, but I'm going to try. So in the first section, it says prohibits this law would prohibit a manufacturer or distributor from threatening to cancel an agreement, meaning threatening to cancel the agreement for any reason. What if the people didn't pay for the product that they bought from the manufacturer?
Coercion, through the chair, Representative Harris. Coercion is what we're talking about, and some of the practices that have raised concern would be coercing dealers to take on additional product, to handle certain areas of product, although they may not be as utilized in that area. So prohibits a manufacturer distributor from threatening to cancel an agreement comes in that area in that discussion, trying to make sure that that manufacturers aren't unduly able to influence dealers into taking on different products in their agreements by maybe not renewing them.
Okay, but I don't see that written in here where it says coercion, but maybe I'm missing it someplace. I probably am, but. It says in here without 90 days advance written notice. Okay, so I'm just going to play the devil's advocate for just a brief second here. I'm the manufacturer, and I sell Joe Blow's operation out here. Let's say I sell Ralph and Penn Air some airplanes, and this is not the right kind of scenario, but let's just say he was a distributor of some airplanes, and I sold them to him, and he didn't pay me. So now I have to write, if I'm stupid enough to sell them to him without him paying me, but that's okay. If he gets 90 days then after he gets to use that equipment for 90 days, he gets to do whatever he wants to do with it, and then 90 days then I get to try and go get the equipment back. Is that what we're getting at here, or would the manufacturer have some ability to try to if a person the situation I gave was a bad one, but let's just say it was a boat dealer or a snowmobile dealer, whatever it happens to be. If the folks bought the stuff on consignment as part of the deal, would the manufacturer not have some recourse to be able to go back if they either didn't pay or something didn't happen?
Through the chair, Ripson Harris, there are several different ways that a dealer might have that product. One might be flooring. In cases of snow machines, four wheelers, and outboard
flooring.
Some of the major manufacturers may have those products there on a flooring basis. So they already own them. If that's your question, and basically what happens in those sorts of circumstances is, when the product's sold, then the manufacturer, then the dealer pays the money back to the manufacturer, but the manufacturer owns those. Mm-hmm. In the case of the boats, if there was a cancellation, your concern was, or your question was, if it was for just, and this question was asked in several committees about a concern raised. A dealer just decides he took on too much product. He took on too much obligation, and decides that he wants to bail out. Can the manufacturer just in 90 days written notice cancel the agreement? I think those are all in the contracts, and they spell those provisions out.
So if they're in the contracts, why do we need this in law?
I would suggest that the dealers might better be able to explain some of the complexities in that arrangement.
I'm just asking. Just kind of a dumb concrete guy.
And as we go on, that is going to be a question that will, if we get to public testimony, Ralph, and then Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Shattuck, when I left the last committee, and I didn't look at all the X's and everything, when I left the last committee, one of the biggest problems I had was that the bill required the manufacturer to sell as much product as the dealer could handle, essentially. So you're the Polaris dealer. You buy as many Polaris snow machines as you can handle, and you can stack them up out back if you want. But then you also force the manufacturer to buy it back. So the inventory control, which is a huge, I would assume, a huge cash flow, it's a business decision. If you don't buy enough, you don't make any money. If you buy too much, you kind of eat it. That's business. That's in its very essence. But if you take all that risk and you put it on the manufacturer, I'd just overstock. I'd overstock and I'd have a little short-term cash, and then I'd ship it back. That's the first question. And then to the question on page 6, what was the question, Representative Cotullo? What was an authorized dealer. Page 5, the line 14 through 17. Since I throw a rock at you with one, I'm going to defend you on this one right here. The way that I read this, what you're trying to stop is you have a manufacturer who has a dealership, and the contractual agreement is I will not open another dealership within 30 miles or 5 miles or 10 square blocks or whatever the deal is that you cut. But then they don't open a dealership. They just open their own shop. It's not a dealership. It's the manufacturer-owned. Polaris owns the dealership, so therefore it is not a dealership. So they kind of... I've competed against an aircraft manufacturer who opened an airline next to me, and I was not a happy camper about it, I can tell you. So I think I would defend that language. If the contract says you can't open another dealership and you find a way to do it because Polaris owns the shop itself, it is not a dealership, it's an extension of the manufacturer, then you've ruined the competitive environment that you tried to guarantee in the contract. So I would agree with that language that's in there, but the forced to sell it and forced to buy it part, is that still in the bill? Where the manufacturer has to sell and then has to buy back if you bought too much?
I believe that was removed in this version, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
I think we need to look at that. So that's a question that come up. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. You know, I think this whole bill is about the consumer, the distributor, and the manufacturer. And many times, two of them are going to be wrestled to the ground and somebody else is left standing. One of the things that came to my focus here is Article 4, refusal to ship or deliver. If you're looking at it, it's on page 3, line 10. A manufacturer distributor may not, without just cause, refuse to ship or deliver. Now, I imagine that there's conditions in a contract between a manufacturer and a distributor.
Yeah, I was on the phone.
And without just cause is a term, a legal term of art. And what happens when they're in conflict? I mean, how are you playing that out?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg. I was trying to find where you were. Which page?
5.
On what version?
Line 10. Oh.
Page 5. Yeah, he had it. I think you got it. I think you misquoted yourself. But it was refusal to ship or deliver, which is on 5, page 10, line 10.
And now that I found that, would you restate your question?
Well, you know, the conditions for the relationship, you know, when ordering parts, and you might have already violated your agreement with the manufacturer, but because that's not considered a legal ease under without just cause, what happens in that situation where the manufacturer doesn't want to do business with you anymore because you violated you know, terms of your agreement? But here it says, you know, I don't know if those are terms of just cause.
If
you're going to force them to still deliver products to somebody that they don't want, that they're trying to sever their relationship with.
Mr. Chairman, there are many questions that are being asked, and
okay, we would write them down.
Yes, and we'll go back to a listing.
Okay, here's one question that just kind of burns in me.
Yeah, right.
On, we have in 4545700.
Yes.
Outside of your bill, but on the, in fact, I'll bring people to it. On page 8, line 24, we have the fact that 45700 to 790 do not apply. And yet, it's the very thing that's dealing with, you're dealing with, is distributorships. And so, is it because of dealerships that you accepted yourself from the section? Because many of the provisions of protection for distributors, I think, is what you're looking for dealers, I think. So help me understand why you went outside of that and had many of the similar provisions. So can you help me understand that?
Chair Coghill, one of the... there was an issue that was brought up today with that, and we're trying to fully understand how those two tie in.
Then help me understand it when we get back to the committee next time.
Yes.
All right. So any other questions? I think we've got him loaded up pretty good. And here's what I would suggest, Mr. Shattuck, and to the representative who's carrying this bill. He needs to do some work. You can see the committee structure we have here. We're not going to be satisfied with just sending a bill out here.
Right.
We want to make sure that distributors and dealers get fair shake, consumers get a fair shake, but we're not going to put the manufacturers in a position where they don't want to deal in Alaska either. So there, it's just like you say, it's an arm wrestling contest. Everybody has to win on this one. And so that's what we're looking for, how to do good consumer protection and let everybody get win and still allow contracts to be free-flowing. And so, Representative Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. It looks like you're getting ready to wrap up, and I do have one burning concern. It's on page 6, line 12. And if I read this correctly, all someone has to do is allege an act, and then the manufacturer is, in fact, responsible for all legal fees. I have some real grief with that. I certainly would like to have that addressed. Mm-hmm. I could walk in and say, well, this is a bad machine, and it could be because the dealer did something wrong, but all you have to say is, oh, that's a manufacturer's defect, and then the manufacturer would be on the hook for legal fees, everything, and that term allegation is very easy to say and very hard to defend.
One more thing. Now, here's a committee question I have for you. We can go ahead and keep this as a CS to keep before us, rather than going back to the original one that came out of judiciary, or we can go back and rework it. So with that, based on a consensus of the committee, I will remove my objection. That will bring this version before us next time we meet, okay? All right, and you got some homework, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to try and answer all these questions. They're an awful lot more diverse and interconnected, and consequently appreciate the time to kind of study them.
And we're only here for another 40-some days, so...
Yes.
And you have to kind of pollinate the committee. You have to go around and visit us, so I'm sorry to have to say that.
Pollinate.
Well, pollinate, and that is...
Speak for yourself.
You have to be a busy bee. Maybe that's... Representative, will that come up in the skits, too?
They already have too much.
I'll relay it to my staff. They don't guarantee.
Before we adjourn, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I've had a conversation earlier, a number of questions that haven't come up here that I did discuss with a sponsor, and just because they weren't brought up here today, I want to make sure that, in fact, they are covered as well, so the list is longer than we even know.
I understand that, and but I wanted him to understand from the committee that he is going to have to work with this committee if we're going to get something that is a balanced, proper, good bill. And so I wanted Ed Sniffen to hear it, and so thanks for standing by, Ed, and just to let everybody know that my intention is to work on this, because I think that there's a compelling case that for some distributors, we need to give them a shield. And so, but we don't want to give them such an advantage that people won't deal with them in Alaska or write a good contract. So, and with that, so we're going to hold this bill over. It's not done yet. My intention is to bring it up as time allows. So, any other questions for the good of the order, Representative Samuel?
One question I actually have for Representative Seaton is what's the timing on that congressional action for the on your resolution?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Seaton, for the record. It's before the Senate now. It's past the House and sitting in the Senate. And
is it?
Farm bill, and who knows how quickly.
I understand that. I just wondered if it passed anything yet. So
okay. It has passed the House and it's sitting in the Senate.
Thank you.
We'll get that ready for calendaring. All right. With that, thank you very much. And thank you, Representative, Mr. Shattuck, for coming by. We're adjourned.
Representative Mr.